Blog Talk Radio.
There is a watchman on the wall, bringing forth the written word of God to one and all. Are you getting ready? Will you stand or will you fall? Listen to the watchman on the wall. Listen to the watchman on the
Rise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. A new day has dawned. All over the earth, men and women are arising. It's time for the sons of God to awake. It is a day of justice, recompense, restoration, revival, and resurrection power.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Vincent Xavier, pastor of New Wine Ministries. Great to be with you. Today, we have been what we would call in an old culture, jonesing. I mean, we've been waiting to hear the voice of my special friend, guest today, Brother Daniel Seckham. He's going to be calling into the broadcast right now. He's live with us on YouTube. And I think, Daniel, you may have dropped off the line. I'm not sure if we're hearing you or not. But good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
There you are. The voice of Australia.
G'day, mates. G'day, Sheilas and blokes out there. It's good to be back.
Hey, Daniel, I think you dropped off on the Blog Talk line. I'm not sure. Could you call back into Blog Talk, make sure our listeners are hearing you out there? Is that possible?
No problem.
All right. Well, you're coming in. You look great over there, man. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. Let's see. I've got... Beloved Patricia, where are you, Daniel? Let me get you here. To our Blog Talk friends out there, let me just, as you're dialing back into the program, let me say good morning to Patricia. She's on the line here in just a little bit. I think that's her. And so let's see. Daniel is coming to us live on the where are you? Did you call back into the broadcast?
I did.
You did. Okay. Well, I'm hearing you live here. I'm wondering, let me ask Pastor Ken. Ken, could you hear Daniel?
Yes, I can. 5x5.
Good for you. You're a good man. Good morning, Pastor Ken. Say hello to the Australian.
Well, good morning, Daniel.
Great to hear from you, Pastor Ken.
Oh, there's my brother. Praise the Lord.
All right.
How
very
you doing
good.
Down there?
Great. In fact, we've got been having weather over 90 degrees down here, and it's been quite warm.
Uh-oh. We got an echo going on now.
Okay, I think we're okay. I think I've got it down, Pat. So, I think we're good on YouTube. Let's go. Let's not wait no further here. I think what happened, Daniel, let's just move forward this morning. Ken, thanks for calling in, Pastor Ken. We appreciate that. And I'm hearing a little bit of an echo myself. Okay, God bless you. So let me just go back here. And Daniel, last night, the President of the United States of America spoke and talked to us about your thoughts, your heart, what's going on there. And then we'll have a better introduction here in just a second. Yeah, you got to love technology. So far, so good.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great. I hear you great. It's just you're not on Blog Talk, and yet people on Blog Talk are hearing you. So that's a mystery. So they must be listening
okay.
through the YouTube account. Okay.
Okay, good. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was a speech for the ages. I think it was an America first. It was championing the blue collar worker. It was all about American exceptionalism, and you could just see the left were bristling sure. in their seats. They really were. They were seething, you know, and the fact that they hated it for two reasons. They hated it because he was so successful, but they also hated it because it made Barack Obama look so incompetent. It really did. And it just exposed just how much of a pretentious charlatan of a president he really was. And they hated it for that as well. So I think it was a brilliant speech, and I think it inspired a lot of hope, a lot of optimism. I think it was, again, it was a speech to remember, especially for how Nancy Pelosi reacted at the very end.
My God. Was that crazy?
Goodness me. I couldn't believe it. I mean, if there was ever such a, you know, it's ironic because they accused Trump of being a petulant temper tantrum kind of a guy, where that was the ultimate display of petulance and childlike tantrum on display right there. Just amazing.
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing to see her rip that up. Now, I love what Kellyanne Conway was on Fox News this morning, and she was referencing what she did, just having a temper tantrum. And she said, you know, all these other activities through the last couple of years where Nancy Pelosi blamed the president in these closed door meetings of having an attitude. Well, hers was displayed before the whole world, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Isn't that great?
Before tens of millions of people.
That's right.
You know, look,
that's
before. Right. You know what's ironic about that is that today could be the very day that two articles of impeachment get torn up. So I think that is quite ironic that, you know. Incredible irony.
Yeah, it is irony, and it's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I remember referencing. Oh, you remember the Apostle Paul in the Book of Acts, where God says of the Apostle Paul, because he was persecuting the church, there are many things you're going to have to suffer, Paul. You're going to suffer many things in the ministry that you're called to. And I was looking at the president last night, and I thought, man, he looks like he's suffering a little bit. You know, he's did tone it down. There's no doubt. But the last couple of days, he just seemed a little. But you know what? A man that used to be a Democrat, a man that used to, you know, be in a position that he was in, it's like the Apostle Paul used to be, he comes out, he's advocating something that's good right now, and whatever suffering's going on, today could be the day of vindication, and then to see the spin on Nancy Pelosi and all the left, Adam Schiff, to see things turn for the glory of God, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Oh, the Democrats have had, they have had a week from hell. They really
well said. Well
not
said.
Only did the impeachment blow up in their faces, but they had an absolute circus yesterday. Sorry, 2 days ago with the Iowan caucus was an absolute dog's breakfast. So they were embarrassed by that because it really was embarrassing for them. So not only did they have the embarrassment of the Iowa caucus, but Trump just knocked it out of the park with that speech. It was probably one of the best State of the Union speeches in State of the Union speech history. It was really it had everything. I mean, even it build and build up and build up right up to the point where the husband who was away on duty appeared for his bride and for his kids. I mean, I don't think there would have been a dry eye in the House except for the Democrats, but it was an incredible emotion driven speech. And I think hats off to President Trump, credit where credit is due.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about the Iowa caucus, I mean, you have the battle right now between Bernie Sanders and Peter Buttigieg, and it looks like Peter Buttigieg, the outspoken homosexual married to a man candidate was leading the pathway. And then, you know, there's a close race between him and Sanders right now. And then Biden is number four. And, you know, he's getting crunched because he knows he's done some really bad stuff in the Ukraine. And so, yeah. You know, I think the left just doesn't have anything. I mean, do you think our country is really going to move in the direction of voting for a Peter Buttigieg for the president of the United States and first man, his husband? That crazy.
It really is extraordinary. I mean, the top two contenders, one is a brazen homosexual, yeah. A flamboyant homosexual who is, you know, on the other hand, we have a blazing
socialist.
Communist.
Communist.
No, he's a communist. I mean, he went to this, he basically honeymooned with his wife in the Soviet Union. I mean, he was caught on camera. There's a leaked tape of him where he's praising bread lines. He's praising bread lines in the Soviet Union. He's, you know, now Project Veritas 2 weeks ago exposed some of his staffers who were basically praising the gulags. So it just goes to show that this Bernie Sanders, oh my gosh. I mean, God help America if he ever got the reins of power. I mean, it would just be – talk about contrast. Talk about contrast. It kind of reminds me of the 7 years of prosperity that the Egyptians enjoyed for 7 years, and then it was a contrast with 7 years of abject – the worst famine you could ever possibly imagine. I mean, that would be the kind of contrast that you would go from going from a president who encouraged an economic boom like you've never seen before. I mean, the Dow Jones soaring over 28,000, the S&P returning 50%. You're seeing record low unemployment across the board, even for minority groups. You're seeing millions taken off food stamps. There is a record high consumer confidence. And yet here comes along Bernie Sanders and completely trashes it, all because of equality, all because he wants to give out free stuff. You know, really, if anything, it's an indictment on the education system and how they have dumbed down the young people so much that socialism would be so palatable. It really is an incredible indictment.
You know, Daniel, it appears that today we have the same kind of feeling we did in 2016 when President Trump was elected. You know, there's this like victory lap going around, the success thing happening, and everybody's feeling good. You know, the fans of the Kansas City Chiefs, they're having a big parade today. There's a victory there. It was a great Super Bowl game. In spite of the homosexual commercials and the transvestite commercials and the transgender commercials and the pornographic halftime highlights that went on in the, you know, there's always that little thread there that makes you with all this victory lap, you know, this thing. We realize that we move down the road and 2020 elections will come. And we see the Democratic response last night. I forget the woman's name from Michigan. She gave the sentiment of what that was all about. Would you like to speak into that?
I haven't heard it.
Oh, you didn't hear it? Okay.
I can't really comment on that, but I could guess.
Yeah, you could. And you'd be right. You'd be right. Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was all negative. You know, everything was bad. They can't see anything good about this president. And so you had a bunch of people stewing in the sauce of and being marinated in their own hostility and hatred last night. What an amazing moment for our country. And yet, where does it all lead?
Yeah, well, I mean, how can you put a negative spin on what has been happening to your country over the past 3 years?
Yeah.
I mean, how can you put a negative spin on that? I mean, you really are clutching at straws. I mean, oh, sorry, the Democrats have banned straws.
That's right.
You're clutching at
wind. They're grasping for the wind.
Yeah, that's right. What they're grasping for. So, the country is doing really, really good. But, and here's where we need to get serious.
Yeah.
I mean, the measure, the litmus test, is really, is America repenting? Are they turning away from their sin? And we saw a little bit of an indication from the halftime show just of what was branded as entertainment. You know, so there's still, you know, and here's the thing about America. America is such a nation of contrasts. I mean, you have the America that loves the Lord and takes a stand for righteousness, but then there's the other side of America that is full on headlong into depravity. So it's interesting because America is so positioned in liberty, because they are so focused on liberty, because America itself as a nation has basically, its foundation is on liberty. People have used that liberty to pursue sin in the most extreme way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's almost as if the nation that is known for its pursuit of liberty is now known for its pursuit of sin. They have the freedom, the absolute freedom to pursue absolute sin. And that really sums it up. It sums up America. And see, you don't see this freedom to sin so flamboyantly and so brazenly in other nations, because the other nations don't have the foundation for liberty and freedom. So, even in nations that are oppressed, that you don't see the liberty to flamboyantly sin as America does. So, yeah, there's a great paradox. There is a great paradox within the United States.
Yeah, the glory was once, Daniel, where a Peter Bidegu, we would find in the love of Christ a repentant man who was once practicing the lifestyle of homosexuality, but has repented and is now running for presidency. And people can get behind that and not hold him accountable for his past because he's been cleansed in the blood of the Lamb. But that's not the case. We have a man that's telling us that God is okay with his homosexuality. And you have a huge, flow towards him.
It's very, very sad. Very sad. Now, and I can tell you a bit why there is such a brazenness is because of the state of the church. Mm. Because here's the thing. There are other denominations that will say that Pete Bidegu is fine. Other denominations will actually bless him. Other denominations will champion him and say, you know, he's a great Christian man. This is the moral ineptitude, the cognitive dissonance that we're seeing going on at the moment. See, these people who are so brazen in their sin are saying, well, listen, I'm not going to listen to those extremists here, because this denomination over here are telling me that I'm okay. So who am I going to listen to? Which part of the church am I going to listen to? Am I going to listen to these fundamentalists over here, or am I going to listen to this other part of the church over here that tells me I'm okay? I'm going to listen to this other part of the church. And so that's why there is such a brazenness, because basically the true church that is speaking up for true righteousness is being drowned out. They're being muzzled out. And that's why, you know, I often say that when the church loses her voice, the world loses her conscience. And that's exactly what's going on at the moment.
All right. So, you know, there's so much more to say about politics and government and all these things that are going on. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of trickery. We have to keep our eyes on the Lord. I had my friend and your friend, Michael, sent me an article yesterday about Lysol, the old Lysol can, and on the back of it, I verified it today. It was absolutely, you know, accurate to the core. It literally talked about how it killed 99.9% bacteria, and it literally had coronavirus on the back along with SARS that a old Clorox wipes actually was tested in laboratory to kill these viruses, but they're saying that this new virus, this coronavirus, which is meant for the spikes on top of the little globe like the sun, the corona, is where it came from. But I thought it was very interesting that coronavirus was on the back of a Lysol can. We may have found another case here in the United States of somebody contacting this. What are your thoughts about the coronavirus from your from where you're standing?
Yeah, the coronavirus has actually been around for a long time. What makes it different and what makes this particular strain so dangerous is that it's actually a I was going to say it's actually a military grade.
That's conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I'm getting into dangerous territory here. But here's the thing. It's a different type of coronavirus. In fact, it's called Novotel coronavirus.
Okay.
That's the different type of the coronavirus. So, yeah, look, you know, there are a lot of conspiracy theories flying around, particularly because in Wuhan, China, there actually is a viral lab that is basically experimenting on different viral what's the word I'm looking for? What do you call it like virus warfare?
Yeah, it's called bacteria. It's called not chemical, but biological weapon. But
there you go. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So there's a like a biological weapon virus. Laboratory that's actually part of Wuhan. So there's a lot of speculation whether it could have originated there. Of course, there's also a lot of talk of whether it actually came from bats, you know. So they've actually the video footage of those people who are eating bats, but yeah, I don't know. At the end of the day, I don't know. So yeah, it could have come from that. It actually could have come from the laboratory. But here's the thing about that is that it is extremely, it is extremely easy to catch. I'm just trying. Sorry, I've got my 22 minutes past two in the morning brain.
I just kicked
which
in.
Isn't working.
We'll shift
but yeah. Just bear with me. But it's extremely. What do you call it when it's something that's really, really catching?
It's contagious.
Contagious.
Yeah.
It's extremely contagious.
Yeah.
So
coughing or sneezing.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, the other thing is that the effects don't actually manifest. They don't actually become visible or obvious or felt until 13 hours after you've actually caught it. And that's another reason why it's so dangerous.
Yeah, you don't want to be sitting on an airplane and somebody's hacking their brains out and they're sneezing and coughing. I mean, that's a bad deal, right?
That's not good.
We don't want
not good.
Bring your mask with you. You got to bring your mask if you're going to fly on airplanes. It's nothing wrong with that. You look a little weird for some people you'll never see again, but wear your mask.
Well, the problem with that is that it's actually transmittable via the eyes as well.
Ooh, is that right?
Yeah. So it's that transmittable that it's not just through the vapor, through your breath or through the air, but it's actually transmittable via the eyes. And that's, again, another reason why it's so dangerous.
All right. Hey, I want to hit you up on a biblical prophetic reality right now. What is he? Is Joseph saying we're debunking and do not even know how to say the important words? Well, listen, Joseph, our Australian friend here, Daniel Seckham, is in Australia right now, where it's nearing 2 a.m. or after 2 a.m. So give him a little break there, Joseph. Thanks for your comment. But I do want to ask you this, Daniel. This is a biblical question that I've been mulling over. And I thought, who better to ask than someone like Daniel Seckham, who's moving in Islam and Israel and loves Israel and loves the word of God. Daniel 9:24-27. Okay, I've been in this breaking it down. And some people say, why get into that? It's esoterical. You can't get anything meaty and tangible. Well, I believe there is something very tangible about it. And with your okay, I'd like to discuss the Daniel 9:24-27 prophecy. And I'll tell you what I came up with, and I'd like you to speak into it. And if you debunk it, that's fine. If you have an understanding about it, that's great. But basically, we have a prophecy that talks about from the time of the command to rebuild Jerusalem, not the temple, but to rebuild Jerusalem, which I think is very key because in Ezra's book, one of the kings said rebuild the temple. In Nehemiah, there was a command to rebuild the city. And that happened in approximately 455 BC. Now, Daniel's prophecy says that 70 weeks are determined. So he's presenting something about 70 weeks, and most of the biblical scholars out there have broken the weeks down to years. So he says from the time to build the city would be 7 weeks or 49 years and 62 weeks unto the Messiah. So some have concluded, myself included, that the 7 weeks were the 49 years in rebuilding the city from the time that Nehemiah was given the okay, and then the 62 weeks led up to the year 28 AD. And if Jesus, if Yeshua, or 28 AD, Yeshua was born in, they say, 0 to 2, it brings you right to the Messiah. The timing is perfect. It's 483 years, I believe, when you put the weeks and the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks, it brings you to 28 AD, the time of Yeshua. And then he's cut off, but not for himself, but for the sins of the nation. And then there's a final 7 weeks. Or excuse me, a final week of 7 years. And Bible prophecy people have put that out to the end of time because in the book of Revelation, the temple will be rebuilt. The city is being rebuilt since 1948, which is very interesting. And so we have this 1 week prophecy. And right now with the deal, and you and I didn't talk about this, but the president went on the national pulpit, and what did he do? He said, we want to make a deal with the Palestinians. We're going to give you $50 billion to build your own state in East Jerusalem. And we're going to the global community is going to get involved in this. And everybody wants to build you guys up. All you have to do is stop chopping people's heads off and selling Allahu Akbar and killing people. Right. Just stop that. And we're going to give you your opportunity to get on the world stage and become a real powerhouse. Meanwhile, a 7.7 earthquake hits. Well, you know, the president may have been dividing up the land again. There seems to be a pattern there. But nonetheless, if that were to take place and Israel to become sovereign, wouldn't that be the time for them to build their temple?
Possibly.
Good answer. All right. So that's throwing it all together here.
It could be. I mean, I would – it could very well. I tend to think that the temple will be part of the deal. Okay. And so it could very well happen. I mean, if you look at just how well prepared the Temple Institute is in Jerusalem, I mean, they are unbelievably prepared, even to the point where a lot of the building building materials have already been prefabricated. They're all ready to go. They just need a crane to actually put them into place. So the temple can come together very, very quickly, and it could actually come as a result of some kind of a deal. Now, a lot of people were asking, is Trump's the deal of the century? Is that the deal, that the famous one that is spoken of in the book of Daniel? No, it's not.
No way.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not that. It's not the covenant of death, and because this is a deal that will be set up by the Antichrist. And there will be a definite reference to 7 years within that particular deal. So furthermore, the Antichrist, now you need to keep in mind that Muslims, they cannot honor any deal or any arrangement or any pact or any agreement with the Jews. They must break it. So this is why Hamas never honor any ceasefires that they have with Israel, with the IDF. They never honor them because the Quran tells them that they cannot honor it. So the Antichrist, Daniel indicates that in the middle of seven, that he will break it. And so I believe that the Antichrist will basically renege on his deal after 3.5 years. And I believe this is also the point from when the power of the holy people will be broken. So, in that sense, I believe that that is the scenario, that is the kind of what we need to be looking for. So we would expect an Antichrist who basically See, he will be speaking peace, but war will be in his heart. You know, in many ways, it kind of reminds me of Barack Obama. I'm not saying that he's the Antichrist. He's not. But Barack Obama had this very polished veneer where he indicated that he was very pro-Jew, very pro-Israel, but in reality, he was extremely hostile to Israel, very hostile towards Benjamin Netanyahu. And, but the general public didn't notice that. They didn't see that. But this was what was going on behind doors. So I kind of would imagine that the Antichrist would be very much in that regard. So to the people and to the public, they'll be very, this is what we're going to do, and this is going to be a great deal. And look, you can have a temple. We'll let you to build a temple. But after 3.5 years, it's all going to be, he will break the agreement, and basically he will embark on a campaign of slaughtering the Jews. Not just slaughtering the Jews, but basically, because I believe at this particular stage, it will be a global leader. And there will be a persecution that will break out, not just against the Jews in Jerusalem and in Israel, but against Christians all over the world. It's going to be a time that has never, ever been experienced in world history before. And Jesus actually warned about this. He said there'll be no other time like it. He said there'll be no other time in the past like it, neither will be there ever to happen again in the future. So it's going to be like a time of trouble that the world has never, ever seen before. And it's still coming. It's future.
Okay, well said. And I want to launch into that. And I want to read a couple of comments that are coming out on the YouTube as well. So I believe, like you, that the deal of the century that was just presented, number one, I don't believe that was President Trump's deal. I believe that was Jared Kushner's deal being put together personally. I believe that.
Yeah, yes, correct.
Okay. And I know that Donald Trump, the president of the United States of America, I believe with all of my heart that he has been set to be an accelerant or an accelerator of things that are happening in the end times. So I don't believe he's the Antichrist making the deal and all that stuff. I believe he's accelerating things so that the world stage will be further set for everything that God said would be. And I believe as he's very provocative, he's a provocateur, no doubt. He's going to provoke the Middle East. He does it all the time, almost daily, with the way that he is. And so in Daniel 9:24-27, it talks about a war. Now, it's interesting that there's got to be a war, and in the setting of the war is when the covenant with death and hell are made. And it's interesting in Isaiah 28 that the covenant that Israel makes with death and hell are Egypt. It's literally another country, an Islamic country. And so I see a lot of what's happening, and that's why I want to be accurate. I want to really rub this down so there's no inaccuracy in it. But it really does appear that right now so many things are coming into view and are potentially right there, Daniel. They're right there.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Egypt too, because remember in Isaiah how it says, I'll reveal to you the end from the beginning. The end from the beginning. So we see patterns that happen in the Torah, that happen in Genesis and Exodus, that appear at the end of time in very similar patterns. So we know that in Genesis there are lots of incredible correlations that line up with the end times. But I think there is one in particular that really stands out, and this is the Passover story. So in the Passover story, we have a Pharaoh who is a type of Antichrist who basically for a period persecutes the Jews like relentlessly. And then we have these two men who basically go before Pharaoh, who really, these two men are very much correlated with the two witnesses that we see in Revelation, verse 11. And then they basically cause plagues to go forth in the same way that these two witnesses send out plagues in Revelation. The Jewish people are persecuted, and so are the Jewish people persecuted again at the end of the age. So we see an incredible correlation between Pharaoh in the book of Exodus, as we will see with the Antichrist at the end of the age. And I think the parallels there are quite striking.
Okay. The only difference is there's not a war going on at that time. Here we have a war. And so if I were to just take this into simple language and really lay it forth and describe it, what I'm seeing, and I want to know if I'm accurate or not, but what I would view this whole prophecy as is something provoking the Middle East, the Islamic world today, where they would gather. ISIS was not a real caliphate, and Baghdadi was not a real khalifa, in my understanding, because there was never agreement between the Sunni and the Shia, right? Sects of Islam. But there will come, in the provocation, a khalifa, the 12th imam, the Mahdi, whatever it is, a leader of the entire Islamic world would gather together and a war would begin. Israel would be involved. This would be the climate. And all of the people of the prince, now it says in Daniel 9:24-27, that the people of the prince, when Messiah is cut off, the people of the prince will tread Jerusalem. I mean, they're coming against the holy city. The prince there is the Antichrist. The people of the prince is the Islamic world that is joined to their Islamic, you know, hadith and their Quran about the imam, you know, all of this. So they have a world ruler now. And so we're seeing a global influence, a global war in the Middle East. It spreads to the ends of the earth. And this is the climate where things get really intense. We would call that World War III. Am I close to that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting verse that you pulled out of Daniel. So basically, the people of the prince that is to come. So the Hebrew there is interesting because it's Am Nagid. Am as for people, Nagid, prince. So Daniel chose, he could have chosen three Hebrew words for that. He could have chose, he chose Am, but he also could have chose the Goyim, okay, which means nations, or he could have chosen Mamlaka. Mamlaka means kingdom, okay? He could have said the people, the kingdom of the prince, or he could have said the nation of the prince, but he didn't say that. He said Am. Now, Am is a very... what makes Am different from Goy, from Goyim, is that Am means ethnicity. Ethnicity. So he says that the Am, the people group, the ethnicity of the prince. Okay, so that's a really important thing to raise right there. Now, also keep in mind that the people of the prince, okay, who were the people of the prince? Well, let's go back and have a look at the foreshadowing that we actually saw during the with the sacking of Jerusalem in AD 69 and AD 70, because there is a foreshadowing of the fulfillment of that prophecy. It wasn't the final fulfillment, but it was we see a glimpse, we see a partial fulfillment. What makes that interesting is this, is that 96% of the Roman soldiers were not actually Italian. So there are basically provincial soldiers. There were soldiers that were basically sourced from the surrounding lands, from the surrounding nations. So only the top 4% of the Roman armies were actually Italian. And they were the commanders, the generals, the leaders. They were the ones who were the Italians. But the ones who actually did the dirty works, the ones who actually fought the wars, were actually sourced from Syria and Egypt. Who were those people? Well, they were Arabs. That might be come as a shock, but these are the people that were actually sourced from those areas. So basically, they had these people who already had a unnatural hatred towards the Jews.
Right.
And so these were the people that Titus led to destroy. And by the way, there is a conflicting reports upon whether Titus actually did want to destroy the temple or not. There is one report, I think it was Josephus, who actually said that Titus actually tried to stop his men from burning down the temple, but they were caught up in like a frenzy of rage in destruction and destroying things. And in fact, it says that he went waving down the Mount of Olives, saying, "Stop, stop, don't do that. I don't want you to destroy that." But anyway, they eventually went ahead and they destroyed the temple. So it is interesting that the people of the prince, so the people who were the people, well, they weren't Romans. They were actually provincial soldiers who were sourced from the surrounding nations, who were actually Arabs. Mm-hmm. And so this comes 600 years before Islam. So it is interesting that the Amnagid, the people, the ethnicity of the people were actually Arabs. Now, fast forward to the end times, and we have the people of the prince. Who are the people going to be? Well, the same people that sacked Jerusalem back then will be the same people that will sack Jerusalem in the future. And these will be the Muslims. These will be the Arabs that will be basically doing this. And they will have the blessing from the United Nations. As we see in Zechariah chapter 12 and Zechariah 14, it says all the nations. This is really important because God will contend with every nation on the earth. Every nation on the earth, God will contend with. There's no nation that will be exempt. There's no nation that will actually where he won't have to contend with them. No, every nation God will be contending with. But here's the thing: the United Nations will give their blessing to the armies of Muhammad, the Mujahideen, who will basically carry out the time of Jacob's trouble. It's going to be horrific. Remember what Jesus said. Well, Zechariah says that the women will be ravished, the women will be raped. Jesus says how terrible it will be for nursing women and pregnant women and nursing mothers. It's going to be a horrific time. Yeah. It's so not that, something that I'd like to dwell on.
Yeah, let's do that. Right, exactly. So Revelation chapter 13 deals with the dragon that gives them their power and their seat and their authority. That sounds like a United Nations betrothal. But this all sounds like to me, Daniel, that this goes all the way back in Bible prophecy. And I was always trained, let the Bible interpret itself. This goes all the way back to Ishmael. This goes all the way back to the Arab world. Ishmael, he's the wild man. His hand is against every man, and every man's hand is against him. He's an archer, right? And so I believe that what was at the beginning will show up at the end, and the Ishmael lineage is what we're going to see persecuting Israel in the first place, because that's where persecution against Isaac began, and then it goes on down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this in a message that I spoke in Nashville probably about 2 years ago, called the basically about the origins of the Middle East conflict. So there is a case to be made that that the Muhammad is descended from Ishmael. I wouldn't put my house on it though. I would say it's not a credible case to make that. There are some who make the case, there are others who don't. I know that David Wood and a bunch of some of his guys actually say that it's not true, that they can't really make a case for it. But I mean, it would be poetic justice if it was. I mean, it would make a lot of sense. But beside that, I mean, there is a lot of grievance down that family line. I mean, Ishmael he had a lot of grievance there. There's no doubt about that. Grievance towards his father, grievance toward his father's offspring. And that's why the descendants of Ishmael had an incredible hatred. Keep in mind that Ishmael's grandson was actually Esau. So that is, again, and Esau and the Edomites were Israel's most detested enemies, you know, so much so that we find the horrific psalm where it says, "Happy is he who takes your basically rips out your pregnant women and dashes the children against the rock, who takes your children, who takes your infants and dashes their heads against the rocks." And that's what the Edomites were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this ancient hatred. You know, let's just say for the benefit of the doubt that Muhammad was descended from them. That would justify the lineage of grievance. The lineage of grievance is definitely there. I mean, Muhammad was just, I mean, he doesn't really need that lineage of grievance. I mean, he was that incensed by the fact that the Jews and the Christians wouldn't listen to him, and they wouldn't believe him in regard to his newfound religion. They wouldn't have any part of it. So basically, that was for Muhammad, that was the impetus that he needed to slaughter both Jews and Christians, and why within Islam. The impetus is still there.
Wow. We just got a comment while you were talking, Daniel, from Joseph. He says those babies being dashed on the rocks was a mark of the beast. Babies, mark of the beast. Mm. So let me say this. This conversation is deep and wide and rich, and I think everybody with the love of God first established in their heart needs to look at these Bible prophecies, because we can know all prophecy and have not love, and we're in trouble, right? So what I want to talk about now for just a moment, I heard there were billions, with a B, billions of locusts in Africa right now.
Yeah.
Can you speak into that? What do you know about the locusts?
Yeah, not just in Africa. So in Sudan, Ethiopia, but even in Pakistan. That's unusual. You know, like all over the Middle East and in Africa, these swarms of locusts that in biblical plagues, which I think is really interesting. Now, by the way, there is an outbreak of the bird flu in Saudi Arabia as we're speaking. So there's a huge outbreak of the bird flu in Saudi Arabia. We have the outbreak of the virus, of the coronavirus in China. We have an incredible plague of locusts being poured out. Locusts being poured out in Africa, so much so that it's even killing the wildlife. You know, it's extraordinary times that we're living in. So it's amazing.
It is, and yet fires burning in Australia. Are they out yet?
Pretty much.
Yeah. What was the total?
Well, there's only the remaining fires that are actually really dangerous at the moment are actually around about Canberra, which is our nation's capital. But we're now about to enter into, as of tomorrow, in fact, probably in about another 3 hours, we're about to begin a huge rain season that will be, I mean, there's rain forecast for the next 7 days. So rain and thunderstorms, and it's just, yeah. So anyway, there's going to be a lot of wet weather for us over the next 7 days. So thank heavens for that.
Yeah.
Which means that there's no chances of any bushfires being started anytime soon. So yeah, that's pretty much under control.
And Daniel, what I saw in California, you know, the major fires that were going on there, it was so brown for so long. And now you go back to California, everything's green. Because after the fire, out of the ashes, the rain came, and all of a sudden it brought new produce. So all things working together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. What I'd like to do right now is just invite anybody that's out there today in our last 10 minutes of the broadcast. If you have any questions or comments about what you heard today, the number to call is 818-369-0326. Press 1 on your dial pad, and we'll make sure to bring you right into the broadcast. That's, again, 818-369-0326. One of our friends on YouTube is Joseph, and he's been making some incredible comments along the way. We appreciate those comments, Joseph. So he's got some information. He's going out there. But if you have a question for Daniel, as always, Daniel, as I said at the beginning, our listening audience was they were, as an old culture would say, they were jonesing to hear, where is the Australian? Where is he? What is he thinking about these amazing moments of time? And Daniel, if we were to really just accumulate all these events and bring them into the sieve and boil them down and break them down, what is it that the Spirit of God is saying right now to the body of Yeshua?
I'd say that what we're seeing happening at the moment are birth pains. We're seeing all of a sudden a huge resurgence of all these things that are going on at once, that the plagues of locusts and the earthquakes. And by the way, earthquakes are going on. Like, there's tremors all over the place in diverse places, like places that you wouldn't even imagine that there would be. And furthermore, there are dormant and extinct volcanoes coming back to life, which is amazing. So in the Philippines and in New Zealand and all over the world. So we're seeing all these things going on all of a sudden, all, you know, rumors of wars and wars and rumors of wars. It's all going on, but it's birth pains. As it does with a woman that enters into labor. So the pains initially, they're dull and they're far apart. But what happens is that they become more intense and closer together. So that's exactly what we're seeing at the moment. I would say people need to get right with God. People need to search their hearts. And really, if there's ever a time to repent and get right with the Lord, it's now. It's not tomorrow. You know, don't seek the Lord at 11 o'clock, as the saying goes, for those who seek the Lord at 11 die at 10:30. Get right with God, make your peace with the Lord, and get everything sorted out now. So I would do that and start listening to what God has to say. Start listening to the voice of the Holy Spirit. You need to catch what the will of God is for you and start being obedient, walking with the Lord and walking in step with the Spirit. That's what I say is absolutely crucial. Now, you could have gotten away with it years ago by having kind of like a half-hearted kind of walk with the Lord, and it wouldn't have cost you as much. But these days that we're living in now, if you are disobedient, if you harden your heart, it's going to cost you. And so I would basically say that people need to live for the Lord more than they ever have before.
All right, Daniel, excellent exhortation. I've got a call coming in from area code 406. Let's take that call this morning. Good morning. God bless you. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Good morning, Pastor Vincent. Hello there, Daniel.
Hi.
Appreciate y'all's work. When you mentioned about the Christ saying, you know, about the women and suckling child and stuff, the statement that he made.
Right.
There's a study, and I'm really, you know, just massively studying, but it's very likely that the study could be fairly accurate. There could be a taking away of the innocent children and the ones under the age of accountability in the primary stages of, you know, events. You know, we'll just have to wait and see. What I see a lot of this is at this point, we know things are jumping off the pages, and we go like after we see an event to kind of match it to Scripture.
Amen. That's true. Yeah, that's very true. All right. So, yeah, I noticed that comment about the babies being dashed against the stone. I mean, the blood would leave a mark on the stone. And you wonder if that is a mark of Islam or if that's a biblical mark or the mark of this beast. There's a lot of theory out there and a lot of questions about what that true mark is. I guess the day will come when we will know. The elect will know, I imagine. Even they could be deceived up until the very end. But yeah, great comments. We certainly do appreciate those. And we're running out of time right now. So I want to continue to invite people to call into the broadcast. The number to call, 818-369-0326. Daniel, any comments about what you just heard?
I would say I wouldn't read too much into what the Edomites were doing. I think what the Edomites were doing is basically the pinnacle or the epitome of wickedness. And how in cruelty, you could really, when you read that psalm, your heart aches. You can basically sense the agony in what they are trying to say. Happy is he who takes your children and does to your children what you did to ours. So, again, you know, the Edomites were the most hated, you know, the hatred between the two, between the Israelites and the Edomites, was something, really something. And by the way, King Herod was an Edomite.
Wow.
Which was why the Jews did not want him to build their temple, okay? So this is why. See, Herod, he went to the Jews and he said to them, listen, he says, I reckon I can be a pretty good guy to you, and if you let me, I can actually build the most grandiose, the most amazing, the most spectacular temple that you have ever seen. And he gave them the plans, and he said, what do you reckon? And basically they said, well, it's great, but you're not building it. There's no way that you're going to touch a stone that goes anything that goes, you know, to this temple. So basically they used his plans and they used Jewish men to build the temple. So that's hence why they didn't want to have anything to do with him, because of the very fact that he was an Edomite himself. So
excellent point, Daniel. I wanted to revisit something you said a moment ago, and that was about, you know, searching our hearts. Live for God like you never have before. Well, last night I was reading these verses out of 2 Corinthians chapter 13 in verse 5. Paul the Apostle says to the church of Corinth, and he says to you and I today, examine yourselves,
mm-hmm.
whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. We have a tendency to prove everybody else, but Paul's advocating, you know, examining ourselves, proving our own selves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ is in you, except mm-hmm. you be reprobates? But I trust that you shall know that we are not reprobates. And so he gets into this admonition. I would encourage everybody to read 2 Corinthians 13. Examine, yeah. Where are you? And we said yesterday, God's plan to show us what's in our heart is our conscience. Whatever yeah. comes into your conscience is what's in your heart. So don't be dismayed about what comes into your conscience. Just know that that's a revelation of your heart, and you need to bring the atonement to that area and start to work out salvation in that area. Daniel, we've got 2 minutes left. Your final thoughts before we go today.
Well, I would just remind people to begin to take in the enormity of where you are in human history.
Hmm.
So you are at the very end of human history. You are living in the very days that the prophet spoke about. And that's something to be excited about. But here's the other thing. This also comes with responsibility. Because we are living in the last days, we have a responsibility to live as God's end time people. And we need to be people who give it everything that we've got. You know, we need to sacrifice more than we ever have before. We need to live for Jesus more than we have before. We need to be more obedient than we ever have before. In fact, I'm reminded of a great quote by Leonard Ravenhill. And Leonard Ravenhill said this. He said, Paul never glamorized the gospel. It is not success, but sacrifice, he says. It's not a glamorous gospel, but a bloody gospel, a gory gospel, and a sacrificial gospel. 5 minutes inside eternity, and we will wish that we had sacrificed more, wept more, bled more, grieved more, loved more, prayed more, and given more.
Amen.
I hear that and I just think, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know,
they had the meat, man. They were walking there. There was something in that generation.
Yeah.
We have to believe in our generation, God's raising up men and women of faith, young people. We had a testimony. It's going to be shared this week of a 20-year-old that just had an encounter with Jesus Christ. He'll be speaking at New Wine Ministries this Saturday evening, actually. His encounter with Jesus has revolutionized his life. I haven't heard of a born again experience like that for 30 some odd years. I'm telling you, it was rich. And so, Daniel, I want to thank you, brother. God bless you. I know it's late, nearing 3 a.m., I guess, where you're at. Is that pretty close?
3 a.m.
Mamma mia, 3 a.m. I pray now that you will rest And we will find a way to get you back out here so we could be on the same wavelength, the same time length. Yeah. And Daniel, we're still working on going to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles. We'll keep you informed. We've already raised nearly $2,000 because of a generous donation for that trip. So we got about 30 people wanting to go. I've got to go. I'm going to be at Kerm Radio today in about 1 hour, and then Bible study tonight in Decatur. I'll be looking forward to seeing everybody. Daniel, we love you. God bless you. Shalom to you, my friend. Arrivederci.
Shalom.
All right. And arrivederci is just that one little beautiful thing that says goodbye. And goodbye to everybody on Blog Talk Radio. Omega Radio, up now. Roundtable discussion. Shalom.